And we'll wait till it gets a little we're going to go on to case number 3, appeal 12-3557, TABFG versus File. And it's Mr. Ruskin.
Correct.
Good morning.
Good morning, Judge.
We've pretty much lost our audience.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is David Ruskin. I represent Richard File, the defendant in this matter, appellant in this matter. There were two errors that we submitted by the district court that we submitted to Your Honors for review and reversal. I'd like to focus on the error of the district court in failing to apply the privilege to Mr. File to protect him from personal liability when he authorized the distributions of NT-PROM. And the reason that I want to focus on that first, I find that that argument a little more compelling because this court just last year rendered a decision in the case of Nathan versus American Capital, which is cited in our brief, of course, but is directly on point and directly analogous to Mr. File's situation in this case. And so I want to make sure that I draw your attention to that case.
And let me ask you this one question, though, concerning the statute of limitations issue. Did you raise that defense in any other context besides your answer and in the post-judgment motion?
It was raised in the answer as an affirmative defense.
Yeah, in the post-judgment
correct
motion, but never raised during trial.
Well, no, I mean,
during the trial.
It was an affirmative defense, and it did not as a legal issue come up during trial until the Rule 59E motion. And actually, that's the reason that I brought the Rule 59E motion is because I wanted to make sure it was specifically addressed. I didn't address the privilege issue in the 59E motion because the judge did address that in his findings.
And then the statute of limitations, that wasn't argued even during the trial. I mean, part of why the judge addressed the other issue, it was actually discussed during the trial, right?
Well, yes, it was discussed in closing arguments. Mm-hmm. The judge gave us, I don't remember, some limited time to make some closing arguments, although he apparently already ruled before he made those arguments. And I did raise the privilege issue in the closing arguments, but not the statute of limitations. There were a number of other affirmative defenses as well, and I'm not even suggesting that the district court only heard on these two points, but I think these two are the most compelling.
Your argument is that his actions in January 2004 could not have induced a breach of contract because the contract had already been breached in October.
Correct.
But wasn't the breach that occurred in January distinct from the breach that occurred in October? In that the October breach involved a failure to timely disperse, whereas the January breach involved the improper disbursement of money. I mean, isn't it possible for there to be multiple and distinct breaches of a contract?
No, and I'll explain that. And you are taking me into the statute of limitations issue, which is fine. I'm happy to discuss that. I just want to make sure I save enough time on the privilege. Yes. It's not the same. It's a distinction without a difference, I'll call it, Judge, because the provision of the contract within the joint venture agreement was that NT-PROM was to disperse funds within a specific time period, 15 days after termination of the joint venture. So what you're distinguishing is basically a failure to make the distributions from an attempt essentially to cure that failure and make distributions, but allegedly in the wrong amounts. It's, as I say, a distinction without a difference because it's a breach of the same obligation. NT-Prop had an obligation to make a payment, distribute the profits after the termination of the joint venture. There's no difference between whether they don't make it and whether they try to make it but make the wrong amounts. And when I say there's no difference, I mean with respect to the legal issue of whether or not it's a breach of a continuing performance contract or a continuing performance duty. This was a one-time duty of NT-Prop. They had one thing to do here, which is why it was not a continuing performance obligation, as opposed to, and I reference this in my briefs, there are continuing performance obligations in other cases, like installment contracts, where there are periods of time where payments must be made, or agreements to pay real estate taxes every year they come due, restrictive covenants that carry, you know, ongoing obligations. This was a one-time obligation. It is not a continuing performance obligation. And so it can only be breached once. And that's the answer to your question, Judge. It was an attempt to cure the obligation, but it's not another breach. A non-continuing performance obligation can only be breached once. And it was breached, as the district court found, in October when NT-Prop failed to timely make the distributions. So if you're focusing on the statute of limitations, I can stay on that, but I would like to address
I think we better talk about, you know, the privilege.
I would like to address the privilege, again, because this court rendered this decision just last year on such an analogous case, the Nation versus American Capital. The district judge in this, district court judge in our case, stated that because that Mr. Fia wasn't entitled to this privilege because he received money. He received a personal benefit from the distributions. That's the wrong analysis. District court got it wrong. It's a two-part test to determine whether Mr. Fia should have been entitled to that privilege. And you discussed, this court discussed that two-part test in the Nation case. The questions that should have been asked and answered were whether Mr. File was solely acting to further his own interests and that's important, and because it's a two-part test, whether or not Mr. File's acts were against the best interests of NT-Prop or harmed NT-Prop.
Say that again.
It's a two-part test, Judge. The first is whether or not Mr. File was solely acting to further his own interests
right.
in authorizing these distributions. The second part, which the district court completely ignored, is whether or not NT-Prop was harmed, whether or not the acts of Mr. File were against the best interests of NT-Prop. The district court ignored that. And there is nothing in the record. You can read through from beginning to end. There is nothing in the record to show that NT-Prop was harmed. In fact, there's quite a bit in the record to show that Mr. File's actions throughout were for the benefit of NT-Prop and the other member of NT-Prop and the plaintiff, in fact.
This is a little convoluted, I think, but let me see if I can do it. You argued that File was protected by privilege because he was acting in the best interest of NT-Prop. But didn't the evidence before the district court establish that he was not even aware of NT-Prop's financial obligations? Because here's what happens, it seems. In closing arguments, Mr. File's attorney declared that he had no involvement in the accountings, didn't understand necessarily during the course of this joint venture what was going on specific to the accountings, and knew only that the funds needed to be dispersed. So, he's not even informed as to NT's financial obligations. How can his actions in pocketing the bulk of the money possibly have been an attempt to protect the interests of NT?
Because what you're reading from is only up until the plaintiff came to Mr. File and begged him, that's in the record, begged him to make, to authorize the distributions. Once that happened, and that was around November of 2003, once that happened, he reached an agreement with the plaintiffs to distribute $360,000 to the plaintiff and negotiated with the other member of NT Prop, NT Financial, and a lawyer to come up with a distribution agreement. And that's, those are documents that are in the record. So you can see there was, for a period of about 2 months, November and December, ongoing discussions about what was to be distributed, how much was to be distributed, what they were going to do to protect NT Prop after these distributions were made. There was $234,000 left in the account to protect NT Prop from future creditors. And, in fact, in the record, there are checks. You can see them. There are checks written to the Illinois Department of Revenue, checks written to other NT Prop's lawyers back later in April of 2004. So there was, and Mr. File was he provided the $2 million to start this joint venture. He provided the funds. So when you say that he didn't know what was going on, he certainly knew that once there was a termination of the joint venture in September of 2003, there had to be a distribution. He was going to get his $2 million back, and the profits were going to be split somehow. And they had to protect, there was also this ongoing concern to protect NT Prop and the funds from the other case that was going on, the Susquehanna case out in Philadelphia, because once the injunction order was entered out there, there was concern among all the parties that they were going to freeze the entire account. So certainly he was aware, maybe not the details of what of how much each party should get, but that there had to be a distribution made.
Okay, thank you. You're into rebuttal unless you want to...
No, I'll hold off. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Swader.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Allow me to jump into something that Your Honor said, which is, you said to Mr. Ruskin, your position is that there can't be a second breach. Well, for numerous reasons, there can be, number one. But number two, that's not what this appeal is all about. That... In some situations, there might be an appeal based upon this appeal is Mr. Ruskin says that the statute of limitations for the tortious interference claim, which was found to have taken place on January 6, 2004, has to begin to run from October 2, 2003. And when we said in our brief, well, Mr. Ruskin is actually saying that we only get 4 years and 9 months for our claim, not the 5 years. He says in his reply brief, plaintiff says with incredulity that we're saying they only get 4 years and 9 months. That is exactly correct. They only get 4 years and 9 months. Now, it is possible in some cases for there to be a factual question on the issue as to once there has been a breach of a continuing obligation, whether or not the second breach, the action by the tortfeasor actually caused a breach of that obligation or not, or whether there were damages caused.
But I think what he focused on was the paragraph in the agreement that says the reconciliation statement will be prepared by NT Prop and delivered to the parties within 15 days after termination, and all profits and the holdback, if any, shall be concurrently distributed to the parties. So that's why he's saying it's just one condition, not two conditions. I mean, that's how I understood his argument.
But what he's saying is, yes, we know that that's what he's saying, but that goes to a different question than the statute of limitations. Because you cannot have, you cannot reduce the statute of limitations by a prior unrelated breach. There is not a single authority in which he says that. All the cases which deal with a situation which there's a contract breach and other breaches, he cited the Luminol case in his brief, that looks at the, there was a contract breach, there was a breach of fiduciary duties breach, and there was a fraud breach. You all look at when that breach took place, and you give you the person the 5 years.
Does your statute of limitation argument depend on whether the 15-day disbursement requirement was material?
Yes, that's part of it. That's, that supports it, and it clearly was not material. We had the parties. First of all, it would have been impossible to happen. This was just a delay where the parties were negotiating. What actually happened was they stopped trading. They began negotiating the final agreement. The obligation to pay what was due under the agreement, was never repudiated. There were continuous attempts to agree on a reconciliation statement being negotiated between Mr. Chernomzov of TEABFG and Mr. O'Byrne of NT Prop. The debt was acknowledged, as Judge Gettleman found, in spreadsheets over time. And then Mr. File said, we'll pay you a pre-accounting number and then do a final accounting.
Okay, so what breach of contract did Feel induce in January of 2004 that was distinct from the breach of contract that already occurred in October of 2003?
First of all, if I may, Your Honor, we are not dealing with a situation where the breach of contract statute of limitations ran. The breach of contract statute of limitations is 10 years, not 5 years, one. Two, even if there was a breach, the acknowledgement of the debt over and over would be taken out of the statute. So what he is saying is, you, not only am I going to cut you down from 5 years to 4 years and 9 months, but you, this wouldn't even bar a statutory claim. So I'm going to impose a 5-year based upon a breach of contract, which file had nothing to do with, by the way. So, again, Your Honor, if you breach a contract, you get your 5 years. The issue might have been, was the finding by Judge Gettleman that he committed a tortious interference correct? That's, I think, where Your Honor was headed. That has not been on appeal. But I'm going to answer your question anyway, because, one, in January of 2006, Mr. File caused a material breach, which is way much different than the delay in the breach. Number two, as I pointed out in my brief, Your Honor, there's another provision in the contract which calls for payments, calls for reconciliation payments, and which calls for a payment on those reconciliation payments. And that's the quarterly one. And that would have been in effect. Let's suppose they made a partial payment. They still had to do a quarterly accounting and make the payments due at the end of the quarter. Judge Gettleman never specified that the breach in 2004, on January 6, 2004, was a breach of the 15-day requirement. He said it was a breach of a continuing obligation. whether you consider that a continuing obligation because it was a non-material breach, or you consider it because it was a breach of this other provision requiring quarterly payments, it was a breach of a continuing obligation. And again, I don't think I've quite made the point. And that is that there could have been a question as to whether or not when he breached it in 2004, not a statute of limitations question, but a fact question. Did he actually cause a breach? And he did. And did he cause damages? Because, for example, if they gave away all the money and they had no money in 2003, then Mr. File could and should have argued, well, there was no damages. You didn't fulfill all of the requirements for proving a malicious or tortious interference with contractual relations because you didn't prove the damages part and you didn't prove the breach part.
Okay. You know, NT Prop consists of NT Financial, which seemingly is never mentioned again in the briefs, and File Commodity Fund, of which File is the sole member, manager, owner. Given that, is NT Prop meaningfully distinguishable from File at all? Because I was thinking about that Nation versus American Capital case. Nation argued that American Capital's control of Spring Air was such that effectively American Capital was Spring Air. And we noted in that case that if that was true, it would defeat Nation's tortious interference claim because a party can't tortiously interfere with itself, with his own contract. Is that what we have here? Is File?
Oh, may I, Your Honor?
Yeah, I mean,
my time is running out. No, that is not what we have. We have a distinct LLC. Mr. File was not even an officer, manager, or director of NT Prop. He had his attorney, Mr. Anthony, who was an officer, director, and manager of NT Prop. It is very distinctly a different, very distinctly, and again, that's not what's raised. We're here on two issues, statute of limitations and qualified privilege. And I would have argued that, had that been an appeal, if it was argued at trial, we would have had that argument, but that was not argued at trial. It was not argued on appeal. We're here on a statute of limitations issue, which is dead wrong. Not a single case has been cited for the proposition that a five-year statute of limitations can get reduced by a prior unrelated breach. The October breach was not, I'll call it a delay. The non-material delay had nothing to do with File. He wasn't even involved at that point in time. File had nothing to do with the operation of this until the end when it came to dividing up the money. Let me speak to the Nation case is not at all applicable here. Well, it's different. On the conditional privilege, first we have File, who wasn't an officer, director, manager, or agent for the purpose of making these decisions. He signed an agreement as manager. He apparently excluded the real manager, Mr. Anthony, his own attorney, and signed it himself. The question as to whether or not it was for the good of the company, still, I say again with incredulity, how could you say that? We brought out testimony that it ended up with some $237,000, and it owed $674,000. I mean, how could, and it's subjected by doing that, taking the money for himself, it subjected NT Prop to this very lawsuit, which happened. Mr. File says, well, that didn't happen until 2012. No, the money was due on January 6, 2004, and he ignored, he caused NTPROP to make that distribution and put it into an insolvent position. It went out of business. He used the money himself for legal fees and for NTPROP's legal fees. How the Nation case, and there's another HBI case, those cases involved people who were making decisions for companies to stabilize those companies and keep them in business, not to drain them and rob them and take the money for themselves. And that's a complete difference with the case at bar. Also, we have Judge Gettleman's finding, which is a mixed finding of fact and law, that there was that he did this for personal purposes, and I think that case should not be overturned unless there was no plausible basis for it in the record. We have cited the cases. I believe that our citations are correct. Supreme Court of Illinois says if you do it solely for your own purpose, it can't be conditional privilege. This court in Dallas, a very, very important case in this matter, says the same thing. Quoted the Middleman case, which we cited. And in that case, this case is a much more blatant case than the Dallas case. In closing, I ask this court to focus. I'm finishing my thought.
Okay.
I ask this court to focus on what is on appeal in this case. The appeal is stated by both parties. Does the statute of limitations on a tortious interference, which the court found occurred on January 6, 2004, can that statute of limitations be found to run on October 2, 2003, based upon a different breach of only one of the two clauses in the contract and relating to payment and a non-material breach. The other is also, can we take Mr. File, who put this company out of business, took all the money for himself, can it possibly be that he did this for the benefit of NTPROP? Thank you very much.
Thank you. 3 minutes. Thank you. I have to start by saying this court's Nation case decision and the Illinois Supreme Court's HPI decision are directly on point. And I'm sure you've read them already. I urge you to reread them because it's the exact situation. It's the exact situation that we have here. Mr. File didn't have to be, as the plaintiff suggests, an officer or director. He didn't even have to be a shareholder. In the Nation case...
But he was the money man, wasn't he?
He was the money man. They came to him specifically, and the plaintiff did, and begged him to make the distribution.
But
so for them,
the only interests that seemed to have been protected were files. There's no basis for concluding that paying File personally in full benefited NTPROP, which consisted of File Commodity Fund, owned solely by File, and NT Financial, who I, you know, saw for a second somewhere. So,
Your Honor, in the agreed findings of fact, there is no dispute here. The distributions were money to File Commodities, $740,000. NT Financial, don't disregard them. This was a two-member, NTPROP was a two-member LLC.
Well, I would like not to disregard them, but they only, came in for a second and went away.
And NT Financial was the other member of NT Prop, they received $533,000. That didn't go to Mr. File or Mr. File's company. The plaintiffs received $360,000 that they agreed to take on January 6, 2004. That didn't go to Mr. File. The NT Prop account, Your Honor, retained $234,000 to pay other creditors, the Illinois Department of Revenue and other lawyers of NT Prop. So Mr. File didn't get all of the money. This isn't one of these, you know, under the cover of night, he built the company. And by the way, the plaintiff says that he rendered the company insolvent. He didn't render it insolvent. The reason that NT Prop stopped doing business is because the joint venture was terminated. There was only one business for NT Prop to fund the joint venture. When it was terminated in September of 2003, there was no more business for NT Prop. In fact, they were obligated to disperse all of the funds. So there was nothing that Mr. File did in his authorization of distribution to render this company insolvent.
Why should we even consider the NT Prop distribution agreement, given that it was dated 2 days after the January 6th distribution?
Your Honor, in the record, there are the drafts of that distribution agreement. So it's clear that there were discussions going on for the month before the distributions were made as to how the distributions were going to be made. Looking for the document numbers. Documents 152-3, 152-4, and 152-15 are legal documents. In fact, there's even a letter from a lawyer in there. It was NT Financial's lawyer sending this draft distribution agreement to another lawyer saying, how does it look? These are all facts that are in the evidence that support the privilege, support Mr. File being entitled to this privilege as occurred in the Nation case, as occurred in the HPI case. Those are directly on point. We ask that you allow Mr. File this conditional privilege that he was entitled to and reverse the decision.
All right.
Thank you very much.
So thanks very, very much to all parties. Thank you. And